Rudy once said that becoming a spiritual person is like wearing a white suit. And the problem with white suits or white dresses is that any stain is magnified so clear. And in a certain sense, trying to have a spiritual life is a little bit like wearing clothes where the stains show. The value of that clearly is that you get to see them as well as other people. This last week, my own experience was that I really started to feel a kind of ego-minded craziness taking over. And it all had to do with Christmas. I had decided I wanted to give this very elaborate gift to everyone I had worked with in England. And I wanted to make this gift. And one, there was not enough time to do it properly. Two, it would have been unbelievably expensive. And there was so much anxiety around it, which I think mimics for many people the holiday season in general, the anxiety around what to give and who to give to. But this thing had taken hold of my mind, and I was now like 2 o'clock in the morning trying to assemble what was actually photographs from the whole year that we spent together. And it involved more than I can describe easily, but taking photographs from videos, one frame at a time, and then enhancing them and doing all this work to each one. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning and I was exhausted, and I just felt I'm never going to get this done, and I'm not happy with it, and the photographs weren't looking right. And I went to bed, and I woke up in the morning, and I felt like we often do when you wake up in the morning. You feel kind of, new day, and then the thoughts of what the day has in store for you start to come. And as soon as they start to come, that's when you start to feel the old ego manifestation. And I started to feel this unbelievable wave of anxiety, and I went, whoa, I don't want this. I really don't want this. And I thought, well, why am I allowing it in? Why am I opening to this? Why do I have this huge need to give this particular gift? And then it was very clear to me. I wanted to express how much I loved these people to them. And then the thought came, when have you not expressed how much you love them? And they all knew. They all knew. I've expressed it in endless ways. Hugs, being present with them, emails of gratitude. And I thought, well, how is this gift going to add to that love? And I couldn't find any way that it did. It was just another expression. And then I thought, why are you really giving this gift? And it had to do with, I want them to love me. So I thought, do they not love me? I don't have that feeling. They all seem to love me a lot. Should they love me? I don't know if they should or shouldn't, but I've given them work for a year or many years. I've given them a play they all seem to enjoy working on. And then I thought, does it matter if they love me? And if so, why does it matter? And then that took me deeper yet, and I realized how much of my life is devoted to wanting to feel loved, that people love me. And how many choices I make for that, such as defining a personality that is not abrasive, confrontational, usually. Trying to be a good guy, nice guy. And then realizing that being a nice guy in non-confrontation creates an enormous sense of safety. Because I'm not the kind of guy you're going to walk up to in a bar and start a fight with, or in life. So being a nice guy, being loved, giving so I can receive, were all built into the same system, and in many ways had defined much of what the Bruce ego is. And the madness of that ego shown itself at 2 o'clock in the morning trying to put together this stupid album. And then I had this realization, you don't have to do it. You can stop right now. Forget it. And the minute I thought that, it was like, this wave of tension and drama and intensity just fell off. And I thought, my God, I have a whole day ahead of me. I have a whole month ahead of me, not filled with insanity. But then, of course, I started thinking of all the other people I have to get gifts for. And I said, you don't even have to do that. You don't even have to do that. You love them. They love you. It's been expressed endless times. All that you're expressing on Christmas morning is an acknowledgement of them. They know the love is there. They even really know the acknowledgement is there. It's more of a ritual than anything else. And I just said, enough. Enough. I'm done. I don't need to do this. I don't need to do it. If I want to do it, I can do it. But I don't need to. And another huge wave of tension lifted off. And I just felt wonderful. I didn't care. I really didn't care. What I felt was a kind of freedom. Freedom from my own drama, my own self-created expectations and desires. Just lifted off. And not only that, I felt that I had looked at and seen one of the core operating components of myself, of my deepest self. I was telling someone recently that when this awakening took place, all the good stuff fell away. My career fell away. Even my interest in spiritual life, honestly, fell away. All the stuff that had defined me on some external level just started dropping off. But all that was left is the crap. The underlying emotions, the shit, the stuff that just was still there. And I kept going, well, why would anybody want to grow spiritually just for that? You know, all of your stuff that makes you a good person is gone, and now all the stuff that's left is the stuff, it's the anxiety, the petty stuff, all the crap just floating around. And then, of course, you realize it's left there so you can see it. And you can acknowledge it. And if you're lucky, as I was the other morning, you can just go, no. Enough. I get it. And another chunk, another part of the iceberg, falls into the sea. It's gone. Is there still stuff there? I'm sure there is. Will it come up? Absolutely. But what's happening, if you want to call it a process, is the arising from the depths, all of the stuff that is unseen and unknown in us, that you can only begin to see when you let go of all the superficial drama, you get to the core elemental stuff of you. And not many people really, really want to see it. One of the problems with what I've been teaching over the last year has been that I seem to be moving away from the core thing that brings people to spirituality or to spiritual pursuit. And that core thing is, I don't want to have to deal with my shit. Let it just lift off and fall away. That's all I want. I want somebody, this is how I was when I was young, I wanted someone like Rudy to just touch me on my third eye and go, ah, it's done. I'm awakened. Now I don't have to worry or deal with stuff. Well, of course, that never happened. I used to have moments where he would touch my forehead and I would explode. I mean, I'd literally fall on the floor, fall backwards. And I thought, well, was that it? Was that the big one? And it was never the big one. It was just another release of something. I had so much stuff to release. I mean, I had so many years of density and baggage, and maybe lifetimes if it comes down to that. And I can't imagine I'm unusual in that regard. I don't think I'm different than anybody else. There was just a lot of stuff and remains stuff. So this idea that you will come to a spiritual practice to be relieved of all of that, to find peace, freedom, it's actually true. You will find a kind of peace and freedom, but it's not in avoidance of or escape from your spiritual or your material conflicts. It's in seeing them and acknowledging them and opening to them and then watching what happens. I describe it as, just now, as part of an iceberg breaking off. I'm not sure that's completely accurate. But something happens when you see into the depth of your own psyche and you see yourself and you stop fighting what you see. You just go, aha, aha. That's it. It's not exactly psychiatric insight. It's something more. It really is truth. It's just absolute clarity and truth. And you just know it. There you are. You know it. And now you will be able to hopefully live with it in some way. You live with this truth. And what happens spiritually is you grow deeper and deeper and broader, if you will, in your truth of self. And that truth keeps expanding, if you will, as does the freedom that comes with that. The freedom of knowing who you are, of knowing what you are, why you are. And the insanity of so much of our delusional life just starts to lift off. I called it filters a few weeks ago. The filters clarify, and you just see yourself more and more as you are. And part of the freedom that comes in this is something Rudy would always call choice. You can now choose, do I want to enter into my insanity or not? Now that I see it, now that I know what it is, do I want to live in that or not? You can choose. And you can say no. That's an amazing thing, to say no to your own, excuse me, to your own insanity. No. You may have to say it 20 times or 200 times, but you have the opportunity and the right to say no. That's freedom. You are not caught in a cycle because of unconsciousness or delusion or overweening attachment. You are now able to look and to see and to know. One of the things you understand is how wedded you are to not seeing, or how wedded you are to the illusion or the delusion of your life. How much you want to live in that. That's a hard one. But if you really want to see that up close, watch yourself leaving meditation on Sunday morning or in the morning when you sit by yourself. Watch yourself walk away from that place of what seems like temporary peace, and how quickly you get caught back up in chaos, and how easily you blame it on the world, on life, on the demands of your life, and how little you want to acknowledge the fact that you choose that. You choose to be caught up. You choose to be involved in chaos. Or when I told Rudy once that I was confused about something, he said, "You choose to be confused." Very few of us own that. Very few of us want to say, "I am the designer of this complicated life." But you are. We all are. We're unconscious of it, so we don't necessarily understand our role in creating it. But we are creating it. And a lot of what's creating it is our mother's voices and our father's voices and our best friend's voices when we were 7. And, you know, the kids in school and high school who are helping us form this sense of personality. All of that's at work. But we have taken from all of those impulses and created a designing element. Something that said, "I am the confluence of all of these choices, and this is how I live." And it becomes so buried in what it seems like past that you no longer own it. You no longer have a sense that you have created this life that you're living. So how do you become free of it? Well, by seeing that you've done that. By looking at it. And how do you look at it? Sit still. Sit still and watch. Watch these forces arise. Watch these forces come up. And can you do it in a day and a half or 2 days of meditation? Well, you know, Rudy told me it would take a lifetime, and I'm 68, almost 69, and it's still happening. So if I could have done it when I was 30 or 40 or 50 or 60, I think I would have done it. But I don't think the psyche could have withstood some of that unbelievable transformation of realizing that you're designing it, you're it, and you can be free of it in a moment. The psyche is not ready for freedom. You make yourself ready. That's really what we're doing spiritually. You make yourself ready one bit at a time. You just let go of this and let go of that, and you keep doing it and doing it, and you become very strong in your capacity for letting go, surrender, detachment. You get better and better and better. And then when they start taking the really big stuff away, you just go, "Whew, wow." Because if one was to lift that off of you at this moment in time, just really just take it away, we'd have to put you in an institution. You would be so scrambling for your identity, for your sense of self, for your sense of comfort in your misery, for a sense of what was, that you wouldn't know how to deal with what is. So we slowly erode the stuff that we have used to coagulate around us to create this persona that we think we are, and we fight to keep it. We fight to hold on to it. Spiritual life is the reversal. It's the fighting to let go of it. And it just falls away and falls away and falls away. And by the time you're at the end of your life, there's not much left to go. Unless, as I've said repeatedly in recent classes, you've never done this work. Then you reach the end of your life, and the mountain still needs to be brought into, has to be explode. The density of you still has to be undone. And try to do that when you're 69 or 100 or 102 or whatever. Try to undo all this. You don't have the strength. You don't have the capacity. It's hard. It's work, spiritual work. So what I've noticed is, now that I talk more and more about this, fewer and fewer people want to know. You know, we're still looking for the magic bullet. We're still looking for the American dream of somebody else bringing you wealth and, you know, doing something, creating this one thing that will change it all. Well, this is the one thing that will change it all. This is it. Sitting still, opening to yourself, digging deep, surrendering, letting go will change it all. But it won't go like that necessarily. I mean, it might. But mostly it goes, phew, stuff falls away. And the other thing that needs to be understood in all of this is there's this enormous illusion in spiritual work that when it all falls away, what you arrive at is endless contentment and peace. Permanent contentment and peace. Absolute eternal joy or bliss. I can't tell you this from any larger philosophical perspective, but I can tell you from my perspective, that doesn't exist. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as permanent anything. Not in terms of the yin and yang of existence. Perhaps in terms of some awareness of the vast screen in which your life is playing. Maybe. And I don't want to say no to that because there are people who say that that's what they've arrived at. My experience is this is it. Reality is what it is. What is happening? What is? And the difference between being caught in what is and being at peace with what is just that. One is at war with yourself and the world and everything that's happening, and the other is, aha, openness, clarity, acknowledgement, acceptance, embracing the truth. And when you do that, there is a joy, a simplicity, a clarity, and a peace that occurs from that. Is it a permanent state? I think it's something arrived at over and over and over and over. You look at the dynamic of your life and you go, take a deep breath, and you go, yes, as opposed to no. I will never accept this. Nobody cares except you suffer when you say no, and you don't suffer quite like that when you say yes. Yes, even to suffering, changes suffering. Yes to what you don't like changes what you don't like. It changes your relationship to it. Your own experience of running from battling stuff evaporates. You start to just go, That's an extraordinary place to arrive at. It's a muscle of ability, of acceptance. And that's what we're all here doing. And if you think you're here for some magical release, it's wrong. It's not magical, it's work. Day-to-day practice that affects something, changes you. And you arrive at a place of freedom and peace and truth. That's all I know about it. So, you know, my goal is to share what I know, not to promote some escapist fantasy, because it hasn't worked that way for me. And I've had some remarkable spiritual unfolding. But there's no escape. There's only arrival at. And it's where you want to arrive. Trust me, it's where we want to arrive. Any questions?
Jake. What is your experience? My journey right now is in, rather than letting go, as you say, of actually transforming from one state to another. And that seems for me to be very, very positive, really trying to transform a negative energy, the negative field within me, to a positive within the same boundary of that thing. Have you ever experienced that? Is that something within
your own? Sure. But when you transform from negative to positive, even having the idea of negative and positive creates a polarity. And when you start to go, when you start to allow one or the other to be there, the true transformation takes place. Rather than one becoming something else, you become one with the totality of it. And that's really ultimately what you're looking for. Trying to become, take a negative and turn it into a positive, you have to live now with the force of not letting it go back to a negative. The two of them are still in a kind of separate state. It's when you say, this is what is, they're no longer perceived as negative, positive, they're perceived as a total thing. And you just go, ah. And that's freedom. That releases you from the need to get away from one to make it into something else. On the other hand, earlier in your own spiritual practice, in my own practice, I had to do exactly what you're talking about. I had to make things into a positive, make them into a positive, in order to move forward. So I don't want to discount that there's a value in it, but there comes a point where even what you're describing becomes a kind of false positive, if you will. You think you've gotten somewhere, but you're holding that rigidly because there's a negative that it could slip into. That's not freedom. There's a truth in it, but it's not a truth you want to embrace necessarily. What you would really rather have is to be, not have to sustain a battle between the two. Peace is not fighting. You know, or, in the Bhagavad Gita sense, fighting consciously. Fighting because you have no choice. That also happens. I'm dealing with certain issues in my life right now where I have to go into battle mode. And I don't really want to, but it's clear that the world has set up something where I have to take a position and fight for it. But I'm not at war with me doing that. I'm just going, that's what has to be done. And so you just take your responsibilities, because they still come up no matter how enlightened you are. Responsibilities come up and you have to deal with them. But you can deal with it in a realm of enormous internal conflict or in clarity and surrender. You just do. Does that help at all? A little bit?
I'll have to digest that.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Anybody else? Okay. We're going to try, you know, next week I said for the next 3 weeks there would be class on Saturday, not Sunday, because of the holidays and a baby naming ceremony for my niece. So this coming Saturday we will have a class at 10 o'clock. If nobody shows up, which is possible, I will cancel the two classes after that for Saturdays. So we'll see how this Saturday goes and see if people want to come. If you already know that Saturdays during the holidays are not going to be available to you to come, let me know, because I don't want to sit here if nobody's going to come. I really structure my time around the class. So you can just call me or email me and let me know. Thank you guys for coming.